Welcome everybody, all the club members to this live session on Wednesday, what is it, the 22nd of July. My how time flies. Let's get stuck straight into it as always. We've got a few members jumping on board, how beautiful and lovely that is. Let's have a look at what we're going to go through today. We're going to go through the new daily focus, which I'm going to drag down to the bottom here. And we're also going to be talking about a team training plan that I've organised for you. And the main topic of today is building rapport with patients. So first of all, let's have a look at the team training plan. Now, the reason why I started this is because a number of you have said there's a lot of content coming through, but even cutting it down from the Sundays and the Wednesdays to just the Wednesdays, it's still going to be a lot of content to cover every single week. And overwhelm, as you know, is something that I'm trying to avoid with everybody, that you can cherry pick what you guys feel is relevant for your practice at the moment and just focus on that, knowing that recordings from all the other topics are still there and readily available for you to pick up when you're ready and when your team is ready and has the time. Victoria, possibly going to level two at some stage, who knows? If that does happen, there might be some additional time that your team are available to do some additional training. The rest of Australia still at level one, and so you may be continuing to be as busy as normal, hopefully, fingers crossed, and not have all the time available to you. It's always a challenge to try to find allocated time where all your team members can turn up and where you can look at the financial losses of the day and think that's going to be okay. The value of team training is enormous. There is a lovely quote that I often repeat, and it's by Archimedes. Was it Archimedes? Now I've already forgotten. Anyway, and it says, we do not rise to the level of our desires or our goals, but we fall to the level of our training. So we can hope and wish and pray and desire anything that we want in terms of our team performance and our collective performance as a group. However, we're never going to achieve those goals unless we are trained to that level. So we fall to the level of our training. That element alone should encourage everybody out there to say the time that we devote to a bit of team training, the financial losses that we have on that during that time of team training when we're not in the surgeries being productive, the cost of the training itself, it's all worth it because we want to drop to a much higher standard, a much higher level than anybody else. And that's where improvement, continuous improvement of our practice, that's where that resides. So do remember that quote. I'll make sure I'll put that quote in amongst this card because it is a quote that's worthy of noting down and just popping on your computer screen somewhere and just as a post note, just to remind yourself, that's right, we want to be falling to a higher standard. There's no question about it. If you have a continuously trained team that are constantly achieving better and better results, you will be more productive. You will become more efficient. And you will have a happier environment to work in. So having said that, what I have proposed on this team training plan card, I'll open that up. And that is a whole day of team training. Now it is completely up to each individual practice whether that whole day of team training occurs once every month, once every quarter, once every half year, once every year. And what I do like the thought of is having the whole team primed in their mind for a whole day of learning and improving. I think you can develop a greater environment for openness, flexibility, using creative mindsets when we've said, okay, this is the day we're going to be doing this in the future. It's going to be a magnificently fun day. The first team training day is always going to be the most challenging in terms of understanding how the day is going to flow, but also to establish in each of your team members' minds a level of safety that they're going to feel moving into that space. it is not motivating and no one wants to go turn up to a team training day. If it's going to be a day of saying, this is what we do wrong, this is what all you people do wrong, and I know what to do it right, so you have to do it my way or it's the highway. And so it's a big lesson, a harsh lesson for everybody. No one wants to turn up to that. You want the team training today day to really tap into, hopefully, the culture that you're developing at your practice of constant and never-ending improvement. You want team members and yourself to turn up to that day with anticipation and energy and enthusiasm around and excited by the prospect. Gosh, we're going to really implement some key systems after the end of this day today. And on top of that, we're going to feel empowered and to be able to roll those new systems out. It's going to feel like a tangible step up in our training. And therefore, it's a tangible step up in efficiency, in productivity, in happiness. So you want these days to be a very positive thing and get feedback from your team as well. How did the day go? What did you like about it? What do you think we should improve about it? Make sure you're creating the environment that everybody is really able to thrive within. So whether you do this full day training every month, quarter, 6 months or year or ad hoc, what I wanted to do is create a structure for you where it can be easily implemented the minute you've got a day to do it. The whole day is very helpful. I find team training a challenge when it is a half hour added on to the end of a staff meeting or an hour because patients haven't turned up. Keep in mind, though, if ever you have not 1 hour is too short, but if you had a patient not turn up or late cancel for a couple of hours, I think those times are hugely wonderful when you can jump in and do a quick bit of team training, a quick bit of role playing. But as for getting the whole team on board with a concept, with an idea, I think it deserves more time than that. I think when you devote more time to it, you get greater results and you get much more responsibility, team responsibility for rolling out these changes, because they've got a chance then, they've got the time to have a chance to play a role in the system, in the construction of the system itself. And the minute your team members play a role in the construction of these new systems or ways of doing things, ways of behaving, they will roll them out with a higher sense of self-responsibility, or sense responsibility is self. They'll roll out with a higher sense of responsibility, and you'll get much more engagement in it. And that's what you want. You don't want, and it's a common complaint, I deliver team training to my team all the time, it doesn't seem to make a difference. I send them on courses all the time, but all the changes last for 1 or 2 days, 1 or 2 weeks, and then we all go back to normal again. And so hopefully this will help address the concerns around team training and provide the structure that your team need in order to feel that there is a very clear path of improvement within that space. So here it is, the team training day. And if you get back to me with your thoughts, concerns, what your team have experienced, I'd love to continue to finesse this team training day so it can suit everybody. So what you need to do is your team to gather online or in person. Nowadays, teams are more and more becoming comfortable with the online space. Often we have phones or iPads or computer screens that we can bring into, it's usually done in the waiting room, that's where enough seating and room is available for team training. We can bring a computer screen, turn one around with the camera on it from the reception area, where you can have people who aren't on site naturally be able to dial in, because that is one of the other challenges, of course, is when do we have 100% of our team members on site at any one time? Just going to double check a little chat here. I know that was another message. Thank you. So feel free to deliver your thoughts and questions through via the chat as we go. The added benefit of having someone dial in online means you're already activated the Zoom application, which means you can record it. So recording team training sessions is wonderful, where people who aren't present can watch it and participate. People who aren't yet employed in your practice, and so teams constantly evolve and change, we're constantly getting more new team members on board, they can watch a library of past team trainings, and that gives them a beautiful sense of what is expected of them in terms of performance and systems they roll out and behavior as well. What better way than for them to see very clearly the role playing that you guys have done in how to bring a patient through, how to deliver a treatment plan presentation, how to perform an incomplete treatment telephone call for a patient. What better way but to see it for themselves? And it's one thing to read things on a piece of paper, read a system in your practice manual, read a system in your Evernote application, but different world when they've actually watching it role play out on video. The other benefit of having it be online, as I said, it's very difficult to get all your team members together in the one hit. Very rarely you can do that. And so even if they can't join live, then they can still watch the recording as well. You also want to appoint a scribe to take down important points of information. So that person, that scribe, can rotate around different people all the time. And for key pieces of information, you say, write that one down, even if you're recording it. It's rare that the people who are participating in the training session will go back and record it. And there's parts of course you wouldn't actually record the whole thing, as you'll see as we roll through this agenda. You'll see that you'll be only recording key elements of it. Consider whether you want to record the session. We've gone through that. Make arrangements for people to bring their own food or order in. So do all that stuff beforehand. We want to stop as much time wasting as possible. If you've got on the agenda that we're starting at 9, start at 9 no matter what. Have people become kind of trained in a sense of this is the way we do our team trainings here. This is the way we have our team morning huddles and our team staff meetings. If we say it's going to start on the hour, we start on the hour. 5 minutes beforehand, start rallying your troops. We're gathering in 5 minutes. We're starting in 2 minutes. Like if people aren't ready yet, we don't want them to turn up at 9, go to the bathroom, get a coffee, make sure their lunch is put away in the fridge and everyone starts at 9:20. Time is of the essence. You want as much time devoted to this as possible. So get in the process of that by just starting on time, whether people are ready or not. They will quickly learn that in order to have things have be seated there and comfortable at the very start of that training session, they're going to have to arrive a few minutes earlier to work to get themselves established as they normally would. And if you're going to order food in, make sure you've pre-ordered it so it arrives at a certain time. What if you were going to order the food and then it's arriving late and people are eating late, all the rest of it. So do a little bit of prep around that. Decide on what the focus is going to be. I mean, this is going to be quite obvious to either yourself or your team members. There are so many areas within a practice that once they're rolling out, they either create drama and stress for us or they create a nice, productive, efficient, happy environment of growth and development and patient care. So make sure that you do decide what the focus is going to be. If you can't think of anything, just look through the previous live session recordings and you'll be able to pick up on something and go, oh, that's right, that was a really key thing that I thought we should implement one day. Get the team feedback as well. What do you want to focus on this month or this quarter? Some topics demand less time and others demand more time. If you're thinking about how are we going to redesign our recall strategy, that might be a half day thing. How are we going to make sure the way we bring patients through to surgery and then hand them back over at reception, we want to make that a very elegant process filled with authority, professionalism, friendliness, connection, engagement. That might be a half day session. Then think about how we're going to make the whole new patient experience extraordinary, better than they've ever experienced before. Or how are we going to develop patient engagement in their treatment plan? How are we going to deliver the treatment plans in the surgery and then provide the necessary support, resources, and follow-up afterwards? That'd be a whole day thing. This describes this agenda in front of us at the moment describes a full day. If it's a half day thing and you're going to do two topics in the one day, then you just shorten the length of time it takes to do the role play and establish your system. That will become more obvious as we go through. Have either one topic for morning session and another for the afternoon session, or dedicate the whole day to a larger topic. Encourage everyone to have pen and paper ready. what you want is to have this space, this training space, to be as collaborative as possible. Encourage people, bring your creative brains. You know, if the topic is how are we going to make this new patient experience the most extraordinary they've ever had, encourage them to, during downtime, if a patient doesn't turn up, if you're running a bit early, jump online, look at what other practices are doing in terms of delivering a magnificently special performance experience to their for their patients. Do a little bit of research, even in your own, you know, downtime. Have a think, what could we possibly be doing to really delight our patients, and therefore getting a whole bunch of wonderful ideas delivered on this training day. And while we're rolling that out, while we're rolling the recording out that we're going to be speaking about next, some people will feel quite bold and say, stop the recording, I've got something brilliant to say, you've got to listen to me now, otherwise I'll forget it. Some people, I would say that. Surprise, surprise. Others will like, oh, I'm not going to interrupt everybody just for my little idea. They've got to have a pen and paper to write these sort of things down. We don't want to lose any of the gold that people are going to be able to deliver. So have everyone with a pad and pen ready, whether they use it or not, completely up to them. Certainly the scribe should have pad and pen. The very first thing you need to do, once everyone's established, they've got their coffees and teas and they're comfy, then go through and watch one of the club recordings. It could be a doing session or it could be one of the live sessions like this one here. And even though the live sessions and most, and also the JPPS online courses, obviously, what am I talking about? Obviously, though, it's brilliant. And what I've put down is, even though these sort of recordings and the online courses generally take about 1 hour, and I've put here 1.5 to 2 hours to watch the recording. And that is because we want people to interrupt the recording. You want to be constantly pausing it to allow for that collaboration, that engagement from your team members. Don't do anything to stop that engagement, because if they're kind of pay a price of well, come on, everyone, we've got to get through this recording, stop interrupting, then people will just close off and they will disengage from the process. You want to do everything possible to keep them involved. And remember, the more involved they are, the more likely your new system will be effectively rolled out. So go to the Club Hub and select the best recording for your team. Encourage your team to take notes throughout. Pause the recording as team members bring up points of discussion. So that's the first 1 to 2 hours. Then the next hour is establish or modify your current system. This might be talking about a system that you haven't even got established as yet, such as a new patient experience, or it might be modifying an existing practice, a system such as a recall strategy or patient engagement process in when you're delivering your treatment plans. The key questions to ask and to have answered, and this should be on the scribed out, is what is your current system for this particular topic? Everyone, what are we currently doing with that? It could be, we aren't doing nothing. Write down nothing. Or it could be, these are the 5 steps we normally go through every single month or every single time we have to roll out that system. The second question is, let's remind ourselves what the ultimate goal with this is, what the ultimate goal is. Quite often, we can develop systems and implement systems that don't quite make sense after a period of time, after years of tweaking and modifying and tweaking and modifying. So, for example, the way we market, that we've always marketed by doing discounted prices on checkups and cleans and half price tooth whitening. That's the way we market. We do it all the time. So you roll it out again and again. And so then when you say, how are we going to modify the system? You think to yourself, gosh, well, how else could we attach ourselves to the desires of people who want whitening? Let's have a look. We've done newspaper adverts. We've done social media. We've done an email process of emailing our patients. What else could we do? Well, we could do radio advertising. Let's try to do radio advertising. However, when you get back down to, let's have a think about what's our ultimate goal with this system? What was our ultimate goal? And actively now, what is our ultimate goal? Our ultimate goal is to get new patients. Okay, then. Well, we have experienced issues with keeping the whitening patients engaged in any treatments that we suggest to them during that whitening process. you obviously need a full checkup and clean, or you obviously need, I can see a couple of decays there, but they never tend to come back. So let's reassess what our goal is. If our goal is to get more new patients, let's now see the value of getting more loyal patients, recidivist patients that continue to come back, and let's shift the way we're marketing, because it's not actually achieving our goal effectively. So it's always a good idea to come back to go, okay, let's remind ourselves what our ultimate goal is. For example, as well, you know, I always think this when with the management of broken appointment times, and we've just over the last couple of live sessions dealt with this issue, you think, what's the ultimate goal? It's actually not to get everybody to turn up. It's to maintain really strong relationships. And those patients that are not serving our practice well because they're wasting our time and energy and resources and all the rest of it, let's develop a process just for them, a system just for them. But really our ultimate goal is to make sure that we're maintaining our fantastic relationships with patients. And so let's separate the troublesome ones out. But always a tiny, tiny percentage of your patient base are troublesome when it comes to breaking appointment times or not paying their account or being rude to the staff. Tiny percentage. Let's not paint everyone with the same brush. So looking at your ultimate goal and revisiting that's a very good thing. The next question is, what does an improved system look like? What does an improved system look like? And what I often think about when it comes to this kind of question is, a helpful frame to use is, let's imagine the greatest dental practice on the face of the earth. They do everything perfectly. Everything is ideal. Patients are perfect. They're perfectly behaved. They've got the perfect level of fees. They've got the perfect physical location. All of their design and decor is ideal. The team members look magnificent and they perform beautifully. You can't fault this practice. What would this system that we're talking about, how would they roll out that system? What would it look like in that building? And I find that a helpful frame because I think sometimes we get into the mindset of trying to think of how we can improve with our current limitations, with our current team members, some of whom perform great and others don't. And so we start to bring down in size the amount of power that we can have when we're developing a brand new system that we want to work really well for our practice and our patients. And so when you break down those barriers by going, well, it's not us, it's this wonderful practice somewhere else, it's not us, they don't have all of our limitations, what would they do? And then you can establish a system. You could try to reach it, but sometimes you kind of come back a little bit, say, well, that would be ideal. That's an ultimate goal, but let's settle on this level now. Rather than starting from the bottom up, you're starting from a top down, if that makes sense. The next question is, what is needed for this new system to be implemented successfully? Again, another challenge when we're trying to implement systems is that we go, okay, we want to do this great new way of recalling patients. We're going to get a recall card shaped in the tooth. I say that because that's what I used to do, shaped in the size of, you know, as a tooth, had a little magnet on the back. We're going to get this new system going. It's going to be fantastic. And then we kind of leave it there. And then the next staff meeting, we say, well, how are we going with the recall cards in the shape of the tooth? Like, well, I don't know, who was going to design it? Well, who was going to contact the printer? How many did we need to order? And you don't get specific enough about the little action steps that are required in order to do that. Another example would be, we want to make sure that that new patient experience is really elegant and lovely and all the rest of it. And when the receptionist has stepped away from the reception, could you go to the bathroom, for example, and one of the nurses is the one welcoming in that new patient. She knows the process to go through, but, oh, I've got to give you a form. Where do we keep the new patient forms? I'm not quite sure. Or it's at the end of the appointment time, you're supposed to get a bag, a little welcome bag, and I don't know where that's kept. And so you've got to make sure that all the little bits and pieces that are required in order to get this new system rolled out successfully are all identified. And this can all be done within this hour of establishing or modifying your system. What are each team member's responsibility in the new system? So this is a key thing as well. Every team member will have some sort of role to play, no matter what system it is. They'll either be one end of the spectrum, actively participating at every single time it rolls out, or at the other end of the spectrum, constantly asking the question, what can I do for you? Because we're a what can I do for you kind of people around here. What can I do to you to help you roll out that system? I'll be encouraging. I will cheer you on. I'll help you out if you're busy and you can't roll that system out straight away. So what role is each team member going to play in the implementation of this new system? Then you go to lunch, have a bit of a break, get the body moving, and then we go into role play. The role play is the most effective way of team training there is. Again, we've mentioned before that just reading information from a system in a manual can only ever be so engaging. You yourself as a human being rolling out the experience of implementing a system does a number of things. One of those things is it creates the clarity around what's going to get done, what the expectations on your performance are. It also gives you the chance to roll it out again and again and get your verbiage right, get your approach right. It also allows you to practice it, practice it, practice it. With practice comes mastery. With practice comes mastery. Often we think, I just tell everybody what the new system is, or we identify what the new system is, and then we want it done 100% of the time, 100% right, and it's unrealistic to expect that. People need time and time and time again to master rolling out that system. And when you've got a bunch of people rolling out a system beautifully, any younger staff member, newer staff member coming into the fold, they don't start from all the way back here where you guys did in the team training in terms of that rolling that system out effectively. They're also now observing, hearing, watching this system being rolled out perfectly time and time and time again, time again. And so they're learning through observation, another crucial way, a highly effective way of training. I think about when I was started to be on reception, and you don't have very elegant conversations with patients. You're young, you're intimidated by half the people that turn up, and you don't know how to manage people who are a little bit angry or a little bit complainy or a little bit challenging. I learned so much from being a second person on reception and watching the master at work and watching them in a repeated fashion, managing these processes in the same way, over and over again. So it is a wonderful thing to have a combined team. You've got some team members who are really experienced that do things great that people can learn from. And then you have a group of younger ones, because we always need new blood coming through into the industry, learning and growing and then becoming the leaders and masters themselves. So role play is extraordinary. However, role play is only effective if there's a really safe environment for your team members and they are not shy, or the shyness they feel, they then start to have more faith and confidence as those role plays roll out and no one's in trouble, no one's making fun of each other or all the rest of it. And it doesn't, and you can look incompetent, and that's great. We love it when people appear incompetent in a training process. That's the whole point of the training, to bring competency where there is incompetency. So I'll just read through what I've written here. Use the JPPS role play guide, role play your new system out. This identifies initial barriers and also allows the whole team to know where the resources are for the implementation of the new system. Role play is the most successful training method. It provides team members with clarity of goals and expectations of performance, provides them with the opportunity to create a physical experience of performing the task, and gives the chance to practice the task over and over again, something required to master the process. Now, I've just got here, it just reminded me to say to you, the physical experience of performing the task. So always keep in mind that they think, oh, but in a real life situation, it'll be different. I won't know what to do. Your brain can't tell the difference between a real and false memory. So that you've, because that person has had a chance to do it again and again, make a few mistakes, modify, improve, do it again, get a bit of practice going, then the very next moment they're called on to roll out that system, they will absolutely more likely do it and do it well, because their brain hasn't remembered it as training. The subconscious brain has just remembered it as doing it. So role play enormously effective. Part of this card is the role play guide. So it will help you put structure and allay any concerns that your team members may have in terms of the role play. Just make sure you stick with it. There's no point in saying you'll be safe, but then making sure they're not safe, or saying something that they don't feel safe in, because that trust will be broken. We want the role players to be a level playing field for everyone. We're all here to improve. The next hour is to formalize your new system. So now that you've refined your new system, you've worked out all the bumps and the barriers during the role play, and that role play, keep in mind, the role play is designed also to be interrupted constantly. People are either playing the active role or observing. Everyone benefits equally when it comes in that space. As an observer, you can all of a sudden say, oh, that what you said then, that sounds awesome. We should put that as part of our scripting, everyone. That sounds great. Or, you know what, that looked a little clunky. I wonder whether we could do that a slightly different way, the way you're taking the patient into the chair there. I think if we could do that in a little bit more elegant way, let's role play that one out. So it's designed to be constantly interrupted all the way through the role plays. And you do it, you know, maybe the first quarter of it, you go, didn't feel right, let me do it again. And you do the first quarter again, yeah, that feels better, let me practice that a couple of times. And then you continue to move on. It's all at team's pace, not the pace you want or the need, but at the team's pace. So then you formalize it. So now that you've got your, you have refined your new system, create a written document and or video, awesome video. You've got your YouTube channels up for your practice. Put it in there. Wonderful for current members and newer team members as they come into your practice to watch that. As one of your new practice systems, enter it into Evernote or your practice manual. And then you've got the next step, which is also quite crucial. It is also crucial. Support implementation. So when is the team going to gather and discuss how successfully the new system is being implemented? So make a date. It's not a full day thing. It's just a half an hour chat. Identify barriers and solutions and possible modifications to the system. That's what's discussed during that catch up. Okay, how's everyone rolling it out? Well, I thought I was going to be going okay, but what I've noticed is that this element of it's not working well for me. What are others doing? Is it a barrier for everyone or just me? And so you've got to go through more of a refinement around that system. And then really, we lose enthusiasm for new ideas because it makes us go to more effort and think more hard every day. But we want to push through that. And we just need the reminder of how important it is. Ah, he hasn't reminded me for a couple of weeks. It's not that important after all. It is that important. So let's go and make sure that we put it as a focus in the morning huddle. You know, in the morning huddle, there is a daily focus. That daily focus doesn't change every single day. We are reminded every single day of a new thing we're doing, a new mindset we're having, a new area of focus that we have. And that reminder can be going for a week, 2 weeks, a month, depending on what that focus is, depending on how much time, how much practice, how much accountability the team need in order for it to become another part of the way we do things here. And you'll know, it will become something, we can change that now. We're all doing that. We're all on top of that system. Let's change our focus to something else now. So I hope that is helpful. That is attached to team training plan. A card which is sitting right there. I'm going to drag it over to the top of the doing column. I hope that agenda is helpful for you. I hope that I have communicated effectively that I think one full day, less regular, less frequently, is better than a whole bunch of 1.5-hour sessions at the end of a staff meeting over a number of months. Just devoting that whole time to something. You just think about what's the best environment for myself to learn? And some of the systems that you want to bring into your practice will be life-changing for your practice. They will be the difference between earning this much and this much, or having this many patient referrals to this many patient referrals. So some of these areas are crucial to your growth and therefore everyone's level of happiness working in this wonderful place that's just humming along beautifully and constantly improving. So hopefully that you have found that a helpful approach to your team training. Rather than going, when are we going to do it? Think, how often are we going to put a full day aside? Let's start off shy at the start. That's all groovy. Let's just get one done, see how we go, see what feeling we all get from that in terms of progression and our progress within our performance. And that might be the indicator of when the next one is, if you've really brought some goal together there and you know that's going to make more money for the practice, no problems at all. All of a sudden, you're much more likely to go, oh, sure, let's get another day into training straight away. Okay, so we have now ticked off team training plan. And actually, I'll drag the daily focus up here because that's has got to do with, oh no, it doesn't. No, I'm lying to you already. Let's forget that. Let's go straight into building rapport with patients. To make sure I have answered any questions. That's funny. That's funny, George. That was sent a little while ago, right at the start. Sorry, I didn't respond back then. Let me have a little look at getting a bit of a PowerPoint going just to make sure I cover all my points. Quite often I jump off, I do everything kind of without the prompts, and then I jump off and I'm like, oh, I missed a real key point there. So building patient rapport. Let's have a look at building patient rapport. I think it is so wildly important that you are going to struggle being successful if you don't have the ability to build rapport. And the reason I say that is because people like people who are like themselves, and people buy from people they know, like, and trust. So developing that likability will develop the trust with you and your patient. We are not talking about selling a known brand such as Coke that already has a trust in the brand. And we are not talking about coming to a pub where you're there not just for the thing they sell, but you're there for a whole other element that your friends and all the rest of it play a role in delivering that value to you. We're talking about a space that's medical. People, patients need to trust us in order for us to be successful, in order for them to say yes to treatment plans and to achieve the oral health outcomes they want. They need to be able to trust us. But on top of that, we need to be liked as well. There are absolutely occasions, years gone by, where very gruff surgeons and doctors got business because, one, there were fewer doctors, specialists, everything out there. Two, they just fed off their authority. People just said, yeah, sure, I'll do it because you're a doctor and you told me to do it. And so you do it. Nowadays, it's a little different. If I don't like you, I know I can go three doors down and get it from this guy instead. He seems to be having a better sense of humor than you do. He seems to not make me feel guilty about not flossing my teeth like you do. So I like him better. He's more likable. I can get the dentistry from any dentist. They've all got authority. So I might as well choose somebody who I like. And so the likability has an enormous impact on your level of success. So in terms of from the patient perspective, building great rapport with you guys as a practice, it helps to break down barriers between the natural barriers that are between you and the patient. So they come sometimes anxious. They come sometimes with not much money in their pocket and they're fearful about how much things are going to cost. They come with deep-seated phobias that they there was a patient just this past week when I was doing a bit of a role play training, live on-site training. And the patient seemed absolutely fine, then bang, burst into tears. And so there are a lot of barriers that can go towards them not following through and engaging in their treatment plan. So it breaks down barriers. Building strong rapport helps patients to be open and honest. They need to trust you, feel safe with you in order to be open and honest. It deepens the level of engagement that they have because they're enjoying the interaction. They're not just thinking, get me out of here. This person is just not a good communicator. So it deepens their engagement, builds trust. I mean, it's the most important part of it, builds trust, develops loyalty. That's a great human being. I feel like I get along well with that human being. Of course, I'm going to keep going back to them. What you don't want is to have such an appalling personality that they're passionate about getting their 6-monthly checkup done, but they can't face seeing you again. That would never happen. And it also strengthens the relationship. We are talking about long-term relationships, hopefully, if we're attracting that kind of client base where people are coming regularly or frequently for their dental checkup and cleans, and they're saying yes to the dental treatment plans, we want them coming back for years and years and years and years. And so we're not just having a short-term relationship, we've got long-term relationships with these patients. 7%, and a lot of you would have seen that pie graph of how much of your message, how much of your communication, how much you can engage somebody. Only 7% of our communication is the words we use. 7%, such a small amount. That means that 93% of your communication is everything else. And the everything else includes your gestures, your posture, vocal variety, facial expressions, touch, and space. So just to pick a few out here, the vocal variety. I'm really sorry, but I need to cancel your appointment time. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to move your appointment time. Gosh, I hate having to make this phone call to you. Completely different message. One, it's a matter of course. It's professional enough, I suppose, but doesn't really care. The other one absolutely cared. Posture, for example. If you see somebody who is low and depressed and a bit sad and their shoulders kind of tip in and their head lowers down and, you know, they're all in, in and down, compared to someone who is quite feeling quite confident and bold in their space, posture plays an enormous role in communicating a particular message to you. Touch is huge. Surprise, surprise, I'm a big toucher. And I know that George is as well. We share that in common. We're huggers. We're struggling with the isolation and lockdown at the moment. But touch from a dental perspective, for dental patients, is enormous. So when, as a clinician, you're touching the patient constantly anyway, you've got your hands on their mouth and all the rest of it. But then as you are rolling the treatment out, as that patient's lying down receiving the treatment, if you get a tissue, have the nurse get a tissue, and every now and again, just gently, you know, touch around, because they do feel a bit of spray, aerosol, spray of water around their mouth, even though it's not visible, it's not forming into a drip yet, just every now and then that. Or if they felt a bit of discomfort with the drill or during extraction or whatever, that rather than saying, are you okay, is that okay? How are you feeling? The element of touch is enormous. While the patient's not lying back in the chair, and this is a role play that I did. I'm just going to see a little question, a little notation here. Not hugging and shaking hands is killing me, Julie. I know it's killing me as well. It's an interesting story to me. It's boring for everybody else, but it involved hugging, that's for sure. When I did this role play with a practice a few months ago, and that particular dentist runs late all the time, and not just a little bit late, like 40 minutes late all the time. And we're talking about how we can soften that blow to the patient that's already turned up in the waiting room and they've been waiting, waiting, waiting. And rather than just sitting back in the reception chair, hopefully I'll yell now so you can hear me. Sitting back in the reception chair, and you've got a desk here, and the patient's over there, and you say, I'm so sorry, they're running late. It's going to be another 10 minutes. Is that okay? You know, the usual reception face. So sorry, don't yell at me. That has one particular impact on the patient. However, if you were to go stand up from the reception area, move around, sit in the chair beside the patient, and say, I'm going to use your name, George, because you're in my head. George, Frank is running late. I know you've already been waiting here for 40 minutes. He's going to be another 10 minutes. And you go, I'm so sorry. And you just put your hand, rest your hand gently for a couple of seconds on his forearm and you say, I'm so sorry. So much more impactful than yelling across the room. You've got this great rapport that you've got eye contact. You have got, you're using your vocal variety to more effectively get your message across, your meaning across. And then you've touched them, you've really anchored in your genuineness and your apologetic nature and how sorry you are about that with that patient. So touch can make a big impact as well in terms of rapport building. And they say, you know, it's quite safe to touch somebody between shoulder and elbow unless we're going through a pandemic. And when I was reading a book once, I wish I remember which book this was, that when you are saying to somebody, you did a great job, wonderful job, it has a certain impact, of course. But when you say, when you did that, that was awesome, great job, and you actually touch them at the same time, the impact on us psychologically is even more so. So touch brings a point home, brings a meaning home. Space is another one. You know, if you're standing in someone's personal space, they're going to be a little bit uncomfortable and not completely engaging with you as well. So space also plays a role. Where's my little thing to go to the next slide? Can I do it like that? Gotta find it. Oh, there it is. Oh, good. So what is rapport? When I talk about rapport, what is this rapport? And rapport is basically, I hate using the word basically, fundamentally finding commonalities, Because remember that people like people who are like themselves. Now, Charles and I, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we did the Tony Robbins Unleash the Power Within online because he couldn't do it physically. So it was an online experience. We're online with him 12 to 14 hours every day for 4 days between midnight and 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon the following day. We're taking snippets of sleep here and there. It was like we're in a different world. It was quite amazing. But one of the things that certainly did bring home to me was the what Tony extrapolates out further than this. People like people who are like themselves or who they would like to be. People like people who are like themselves or they would like to be. And the opposite is also true. People don't like people who are not like them or someone they don't like, something that they wouldn't want to be. So you want to be you want to develop this likability, and then you get that with commonalities. And the way you can develop commonalities are either through your physical space that you hold, but you can also pick up on things that patients are talking about and find and link into commonalities around that. For example, with the COVID-19 thing going on at the moment, you'll say to one patient, how are you going with the social distancing or the restrictions or something? And some patients will go, oh, I know, it's very scary, isn't it? And then you could say, oh, yes, oh, gosh, yes, we're all concerned, but, you know, we're doing everything we can, which is great. Or they'll say, oh, my God, it's such overkill for such a thing, for such a relatively small thing when comparison. And you go, I know, goodness. So you can find commonalities in terms of the current situation, whatever's currently going on at the moment. Gosh, it's a hot day. I know, I love it. I know, I love it too. Gosh, look at this rain outside. I know, isn't it miserable? Oh, yes, it's so miserable. And please, I'm not out there. So you're finding commonalities. You can find commonalities when they mention a hobby, when they mention what work they do, when they mention what they did on the weekend. You can always latch into a commonality. And you like dogs? I like dogs too. You love to eat beautiful home-cooked meals? So do I. What recipes can you share? So finding the commonalities will help bring two people together and feel very comfortable with each other. It's all about showing that person something familiar to them. And what's really familiar to them? Themselves. And there was an example that Tony Robbins used, and I'll use it now because I think it's useful. If I asked you to go into a pub and build rapport with somebody, so build likability with somebody, would you be able to do it? And of course we all can. What that requires is going in, finding somebody. What do you do? What do you like to do in your spare time? And it's not about disagreeing with everything they say. It's about agreeing with everything that they say. You know it's going to be alienating and disengaging to be aggressive or to be, you like skiing? Oh, I hate skiing. It's terrible. You're not going to do that. If you went to a pub to find a partner, and you found somebody who was very attractive to you, very appealing to you, and they said that they loved the outdoors and you hate the outdoors, and you wanted to see if this relationship could go any further, you'd be less inclined to say, I hate the outdoors, I don't understand you at all. You'd be more inclined to be like, oh, that's interesting. Tell me what you love about being in the outdoors. And you would try to make sure that you've got strong rapport going on. So building rapport is achieved through various things. One, effective and clear verbiage. So I want to go back into the dental practice situation now. Building rapport, effective and clear verbiage. You will certainly break rapport if you are using verbiage that the patient does not understand. If you are from another country and you've got a very thick accent, that can break rapport because they don't understand what you're saying, or they're so busy trying to understand the words that they're not understanding the message or the meaning. So effective and clear verbiage, you could be speaking so quickly they can't pick up the pace. It breaks engagement, breaks rapport. So effective and clear verbiage, use patient-friendly terms, speak slowly, don't fret about pausing, you want the pauses. That's where they get to say, I don't understand. And speak clearly to them. Enunciate your words well. That just gets better with time. My communication started getting better the minute I slowed down. All of a sudden, my brain could work. It was racing before trying to catch up. My brain could work. I could start choosing my words more effectively and becoming more precise. Listening skills. Very easy for a dentist to forget about listening to a patient because I'm the expert. I've told you everything there is to know about this, and now it's your time to book in. Come on. But listening skills plays very strongly into rapport. Rapport isn't a one-way street. It's a two-way street, both 50% in. So listening skills allow them the opportunity to speak, because when they are expressing themselves, that's where you are identifying their physical cues and vocal cues in order for you to do one of the next things, which I'll talk about in a second. Use of nonverbal communication. When I talk about these cues, yeah, we're talking about posture, gestures, facial expressions, everything we spoke about in the previous slide. So you want to be able to pick up on these things, how they hold their hands, how dramatically they gesticulate, what their facial expressions are doing, how quickly they're speaking or how slowly they're speaking. And you want to start mirroring them. So mirroring is exactly what it appears to be. If someone was to say to you, I truly believe this, really I do, and they're quite dramatic in their gestures around it, then you could say, I don't agree. No, I don't agree. I think there's another way of thinking about that. And you'll have a certain, you either keep rapport or break rapport. But if you've seen them make a point like this, you could say, I get what you're talking about. Thinking about it more so, because I think you're right, but what if we thought about it this way instead? When you're mirroring somebody, you're providing them with information that they're familiar with. You're being like them, and people like people who are like themselves. So mirroring plays an enormous role in rapport. If someone's a quick talker, pick your pace up. If they're a slow talker, slow it down. If they are a loud talker and you're a very gentle talker, that won't be in rapport. And so match their volume, match their pace, match how dramatic their facial expressions are, how much they gesticulate as well. And Tony Robbins had an example of, and you can tell I've got all these Tony Robbins references because it's also still fresh in my brain, where a therapist would have somebody come in and he would create rapport immediately. So for example, let's say it was to quit smoking, and they come in and they say, oh, I've tried everything and nothing works. I just want to quit smoking and nothing works. Instead of the therapist saying, oh no, there's plenty of things that work, he would then match them and mirror their behavior. Oh gosh, what a journey for you. It's difficult. It's a really difficult thing to do, to quit smoking. There is one thing, I've got a suggestion. I wonder if it would work with you. It's just, you just, all of a sudden that person's going, this guy knows what he's talking about. He gets me. I reckon he's onto something. And you could do that with patients as well, whether it be on the phone with the receptionist or in the surgery with the clinical team. A patient comes in, I've got a terrible, terrible toothache. I haven't had any sleep. I'm so distressed. Oh my gosh, that's awful. I'm so sorry for you. We are going to have to do something about that. And so you match their level of urgency and importance and mirror their behavior And then they really get, oh my God, these guys are going to help me. They're showing me exactly what I want to see. You also do it through the finding commonalities, which I spoke about just before. Humor. Humor is an enormous rapport builder. Just having a chuckle and a giggle with people, it's a very likable thing. And it changes somebody else's physiology. So if someone is quite, is upset or anxious or just having a regular day, the minute you can get them to laugh, it's changing their physiology, and all of a sudden they're going to be a little bit more open, a little bit more jovial, a little bit more relaxed. And so humor can play an enormous role in all sorts of areas within your practice or your patient management, but it's a strong rapport builder because you're being likable. And empathy, as I was explaining before with that Tony Robbins example of matching the patient's, you know, pain and anguish over their particular plight. Empathy naturally lends itself in dentistry because I'm not going to say half the patients turn up with anxieties. I'm not quite sure if that's the case. In practices that I've been in the past, majority of the patients are pretty easy to manage, and it's manageable. The ones that really are over the top anxious and phobic are in the minority, but empathy lends itself beautifully, and you can mirror each person's need for the empathy, and you can just read them very easily. That person seems anxious, look at them there, and others are like, oh yeah, no big deal. Yeah, I'll go back to work after this, no dramas. Just get over and done with nice and quick. Come on. The methods of building rapport, I've gone through mirroring. And this list here is going to be a list that's going to help you with your daily focus, because the daily focus every day this week is going to be building rapport. And I might even do it, now that I'm saying it out loud, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm going to do it for 2 weeks. How beautiful is that? There's two full weeks, 10 items there. So tomorrow morning, your daily focus is going to be a short video of me quickly just talking about mirroring. The following day is going to be listening. The following day, find the commonalities, etc. Giving you a few things physically for you to do every day just to try to build your rapport building skills. The bits that we haven't touched on yet is using the patient name. Again, one of my hints that I've just delivered this past week with a dentist that I'm working with is when she was talking to the nurse about the patient, she was referring to the patient as him or her, rather than saying, oh, I'm going to be delivering Sally another local anaesthetic. She'd say, I'm going to be delivering her another local anaesthetic. And the minute you use him or her, it pushes that person psychologically out of the group, out of the communication, out of the discussion. You want to keep the patient involved, engaged in rapport. And so the use of their name, whether you're speaking to them or not, has impact. It certainly has impact when you're speaking to them. Sally, this is what I mean when I say that. Sally, do you understand what I'm talking about when I say this? Sally, I want to make sure this is a positive experience for you. So it really does bring that genuine point home. But also when you're talking about them, when you're doing the handover at reception, when you're speaking about them in front of the nurse themselves, then using their name is impactful. Direct eye contact. Now, we're not talking about holding eye contact for the whole time you're talking to them, but when you are communicating with them and you're in that interaction, the eye contact is key, that you are both engaged with one another, and it's a big rapport builder, and you can break rapport just by looking distracted and all of a sudden I'm doing something important. Keep talking, I'm listening. Not as much as you were before. Open body language. Open body language is important in the dental surgery situation. It's important to mention it because when the patient's lying back in the dental chair, there is no open body language. There is the dentist talking to the patient and the patient feeling they need to shut up so the treatment can continue on. So when you need engaged, rapport-driven communication with the patient, such as when you're explaining a difficult concept to understand or you're trying to work out the whole treatment plan or different solutions for their issues, then you need to have the patient seated up. You need to move yourself to a point where you can practice open communication. If the patient is sitting there like that, you can mirror them and also do that. That's where it's acceptable. But if the patient is there like this, trying to work out what you're saying, and you're sitting back there like that, that's breaking rapport. And so certainly mirror them. So when I say open communication, I want you to take into consideration the physicality of the patient and try to match that. What we don't want is for your bodies, as a silent observer over there in the corner of the earth, looking down and thinking to themselves, they don't look like they're actually engaging in with one another, because one's facing here and the other one's facing over here, or the knees are over here and they're twisting. You want to have that. You want to feel in physical rapport with that person, with the way your posture and stance is in terms of where they are. Be their advocate. This is an enormous, we've spoken about being a patient advocate in terms of whether it be your hygienist, your dental nurse, your receptionist, who's the patient advocate, but you be the patient advocate as well. I'm in terrible pain. We're going to have to get that sorted. You're on their side. You're batting for their team. And this is where I believe quite often, I know we're at 6 o'clock, we're probably going to be going for just another 5 minutes. I believe that when a patient says, oh my gosh, it's so expensive, I don't see anything wrong with saying, yeah, it is. I think sometimes I was thinking about this driving around today. What's the fear? Is the fear that the patient's going to perceive that agreement as it's too expensive? As, yeah, we do that intentionally. We just whack the fees up until people start to complain. Yeah, so it's good that you're complaining, because it won't go up further today. What I believe that it breaks rapport when you disagree with a patient. And I think there's ways of disagreeing with a patient without it sounding like you're disagreeing with them. And one of the little phrases that I've always loved is, yeah, it is expensive, but it's the best way to save your tooth. See, there's a, you can disagree with the patient without making them feel like it's breaking rapport. So I think it, you know, going to the dentist is terrible. I know it's hard for so many people. I know. I don't see anything wrong with that. And as I was driving around today, I was thinking that's maintaining rapport. You can still get your point in, mirror their physicality, their behavior, agree with them, but this is where the buts are fantastic. Follow up. You can re-engage them and maintain a bit of rapport just by following up. If they've had that extraction, that toothache, follow up the next day. Always ideal if the dentist can do that phone call if possible. It's impactful in a positive way, no matter who does it, but it's like cherry on top if the dentist themselves does it. So you can maintain that rapport with the patient. This is my last slide, and the first 4 seconds, how important are these first 4 seconds? We make a judgment about whether we like someone in the first 4 seconds of meeting them. So rapport is either developed pretty quickly or it's not developed pretty quickly. We want to develop rapport as quickly as possible with patients. And what I have determined is that the first 4 seconds can be highly impactful in terms of building rapport. What we can do is in second one, get eye contact, establish eye contact. Second two, smile. Second three, even if you're a receptionist, you can be busying yourself, eye contact, smile, and then turn your body language to be open towards them. And the fourth second is your opening line. Hi there, welcome, you again. So do keep in mind the first 4 seconds is crucial in terms of making sure that we've got the, we're hitting the ground running in terms of rapport building. So this little first 4 second thing could be helpful to have posted at reception and in the surgery or the staff room, just to remind everybody how quickly we can disengage people without even having engaged them to start off with. Just got a little email from a dentist about the ADA VB about level 2 restrictions. They're reinforcing that, but again, it's the Victoria branch, not federal yet, not from the board yet. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that everything remains under control and we can continue practicing at level 1. Okay, so that was it. Now I will go on to the Trello board. Escape. Oh, there we go. It is liking me after all. If anyone's got any questions or comments, please send them through. And Constantine's here as well. Lovely to see you. You may have noted that I used your word precise. We had a conversation the other day about communication and how important it is to be precise with your words. It helps in communication enormously. So thank you for that word. Brought it into my conscious brain. So we've done building rapport with patients. We've also spoken about the daily focus. And so hopefully you'll find the next 2 weeks of rapport building daily focuses, giving you a few little hints on how to roll those out through the days. Hopefully you'll find that a benefit to your days running forward in connecting with your patients. I've dragged our live session over to the completed list. I'm clicking that it has been completed. I'm taking the priority off it. I am now going into our next live session. Now I've got my Smile Sim there. We may or may not do that. I've got about 3 special guests lined up to speak. And I think I might be shifting this one with a hygienist who's I've just met recently, and she's glorious. And because we just recently did how to introduce a new hygiene program in your practice when you've never had one before, she and I had I'm part of a mastermind as well through Dental Business Mastery. I have Dental Business Mastery with Amina Basile, who is another dental consultant. She's glorious and hilarious. And we used to roll out live events. That stopped, but we've maintained our mastermind. It's a very small group of dentists. Anyone who ever is out there, we're doing them online at the moment, so you're welcome to join us. I will actually include a link to it in the follow-up email that I send out. And Glenda was part of that, and she did a presentation. I was able to ask all of my questions around how to effectively do it, and so it was an enlightening conversation. And so I want to have her on as a special guest, and I think having her next time will be an effective thing. So I'll change this mid-priority to high priority because I'll be doing it as a high priority now. It's happening on July 29th, a week away from today. I'll miss you guys on Sunday. I don't know if you'll miss me, but I'll certainly miss you guys. I'm going to shift the priority, the label, and as I'm talking through this, James, so you're a newer member, because this, whatever I can do to help you get your mind around the use of Trello, because Trello is a wonderful, wonderful tool in terms of goals achievement at your practice. Where's my label? There's my label. That one's a low priority. So we've got our next 3 sessions organized there. It's 6:07, a few minutes over. I do apologise. I hope everyone has a wonderful afternoon / evening, depending on where you are in Australia. Thank you for your company. It's now being 6:07, wine time for me. So I'll think of you all while I'm sipping away, having a nice relaxing time until that recording comes through. Your follow-up email will be in your inboxes within the hour. Have a fantastic evening, everybody, and thank you for joining me.